You're listening to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt. Today, we're back in the Grey Lodge. A bonus episode. We're going to hit Twin Peaks, Season 1, Episode 1. This is the first episode after the pilot. This episode is called Traces to Nowhere, and today we're going to cover... Look... Today we're going deep. We're going deeper than I wanted to go this early on in the journey. So how we're going to handle that is I'm going to drop the bombs on you. I'm just going to drop them on you. Spoiler free, of course. But these are some pretty big findings. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to talk about them. But we're going to revisit these ideas throughout the seasons. And then in the grand finale... the super mega in conclusion, it'll make more sense. And we'll revisit it, maybe go a little deeper. And we're talking, of course, about concepts related to the occult. Ideas that have been presented for 50 years. We're talking about a probably the OG of all OGs, of all conspiracy theorists, James Shelby Downard. We're going to talk about James Shelby Downard, some of his theories that tie into JFK and the Trinity site and the atomic bomb, sex and death rituals, and a lot. Okay, we're going to get into it today. Now, let's talk about the numbering of these episodes because it's confusing when you start getting into this. The pilot was episode 0. So most people start numbering the episodes with Traces to Nowhere, today's episode. And most people call it episode 1 of season 1, and that is the convention I will stick with. However, you'll also notice sometimes they label it as the overall episode. They'll call it episode 2. I don't like that. Because when you get into season 3, you're on episode 37, and it's like, well, which one's that, dude? I feel like it's easier to say season 1, episode 1. So that's the convention I'm going with. You'll find variations all over the place. This episode is directed by Duane Dunham. This is a director who's collaborated with George Lucas and, of course, David Lynch before. The episode was written by Mark Frost and David Lynch, and it was released April 12th, 1990. We're started out with FBI Special Agent Dale Cooper, and he is set up at the Great Northern. Because you recall at the end of the pilot, he asked Sheriff Truman where he could spend the night. He gets hooked up at the Great Northern, which I feel like is the hub of all activity in Twin Peaks in a way. He's dictating notes through his recorder to Diane, his administrative assistant, whilst hanging upside down. Okay. And also, bonus symbolism, when you look in his room, look at the art on the wall. There's two ducks flying, which is a great conclusion to the credits of the pilot episode where you see two ducks go different directions. Then it pans to Josie Packer doing her makeup, and you see two different ducks there. Here's two more ducks, right? But right off the bat, you have this version of Dale hanging, which represents the altered sense of reality, a bit of hermetic axiom, a bit of as above, so below. He's literally looking at the world through an inverted perspective, which is a Gnostic idea. What's good is bad, what's bad is good, what's down is up. All right. But more importantly, we have the tarot hangman symbolism here, in a way. I mean, he's literally a hanged man here. And the hanged man in tarot is described as the one who has chosen his current state of free will. He suspends himself upside down to discover new perspective and new ways of seeing the world as well as himself. And he is in this state of transition and attempting to gain new understanding because he has some kind of uncertainty. It's also described as the gap between choice and manifestation. Recall that Dale Cooper is the tarot magician, creating reality. So here he is as the hangman, the choice the gap between choice and manifestation. Also, the Hangman is described as a sacrifice sometimes. Let's keep that in mind. That'll maybe be something we revisit when we get into season 2 and 3, all right? But here he is. He's hanging upside down. He's dictating to Diane about how great the great northern rooms are. But the true test will be that cup of coffee. But then he says, I'm going to play the clip for you. Take a listen to what he says here next.
Diane, it struck me again earlier this morning. There are two things that continue to trouble me, and I'm speaking now not only as an agent of the Bureau, but also as a human being. What really went on between Marilyn Monroe and the Kennedys? And who really pulled the trigger on JFK?
He says two things trouble him. What really went on between Marilyn Monroe and the Kennedys? And who really pulled the trigger on JFK? This is symbolic of him being on the path of the conspiracy theorist truther. In fact, JFK is where the term conspiracy theorist comes from as a way of disenfranchising and misdirecting people of looking to seek truth. We're going to hit this again in the conclusion. Let me set it up. We'll get through the whole episode. And in the conclusion, we're going to deep dive into James Shelby Downard. He was the OG. He was talking about synchronicities long ago, talking about rituals. And the theory he presented infamously was JFK being subjected to the sacrifice ritual and what they call the Kill King ritual. And he talked about how killing of the king is symbolized in alchemy as a crucified snake or the Tau cross or the destruction of primordial matter. And what he was saying was that all things hidden will be revealed, which is ironically what scares me about researching these things and then presenting them. In a way, I worry sometimes that I am playing a part of their revelation of the method. Because I don't know if these are the good guys, if these are the bad guys. It's hard to discern. I mean, obviously, there's certain elements that are bad. Human sacrifice, not good. Okay, clearly, that's evil. But then there are some positive aspects of some of the occult doctrines that I think, well, that's not so bad. So I got to think that there is a white lodge and a black lodge within the occult is what I think. And I'm worried that I don't mind giving light to the white lodge sort of vibe. It's the black lodge that I don't want to be a part of. Okay. But there's a lot to unpack here in just this simple statement of who really pulled the trigger on JFK. And we're going to hit this in the conclusion. The short version is that JFK is the ritual of all rituals, and it's tied into the Trinity atomic bomb testing, where mankind conducted the experiment that, in fact, satisfied the alchemical destruction of primordial matter. And it was conducted along the Jornada del Muerto, which is the journey of the dead. Also allegedly creating the homunculus, the golem, creating life forms, Jack Parsons, right? And here's where we get into the... And if you don't know about Jack Parsons, I think we did 3 episodes on Breaking Social Norms. That's the show where I talked to my normie wife about some of these crazy occult concepts. And we talked about Jack Parsons in depth there. You can check out those episodes if you're not familiar. But we will revisit Jack Parsons later. We're going to deep dive into that as part of this Twin Peaks Grey Lodge journey because it's important. But to me, this is the most interesting aspect of Twin Peaks, in my opinion, for now. But we'll revisit this here in a minute. Let's keep it moving, all right? Also, the Marilyn Monroe is a reference to the first project Mark Frost and David Lynch had been working on together called Venus Descending, a somewhat fictionalized tale about, or theory, I should say, about the death of Marilyn Monroe based on a book by Anthony Sommer called Goddess, The Secret Lives of Marilyn Monroe. I've heard that it depicts a theory in which Bobby Kennedy kills Marilyn Monroe, which is very interesting because now we've got RFK Jr. running for president and making the rounds on Joe Rogan and Bill Maher. I'm about halfway through the Bill Maher podcast. I like a lot of the things he says. But whatever, right? The name Venus Descending refers to astrology signs, which is important in the scheme of all occult activity. You know the deal there. Goes back to the Babylonian stargazers. It's the root of all occult thinking. And then, of course, you've got this parallel of beautiful women facing premature deaths. The, you know, much like Laura Palmer. And in fact, in this episode, you hear Dr. Hayward choking up, looking at the photo of Laura Palmer on the morgue table. You know, he says something to the effect of, "My God, she's so beautiful. Who could do this?" As if it's somehow more tragic that a beautiful person dies early than an ugly person. Next, we get one of my favorite scenes of the entire Twin. This episode is full of iconic scenes, by the way. One of my favorite scenes in all of Twin Peaks. Dale Cooper is getting breakfast at the Great Northern. And there's two excellent parts of this. I'm going to play the clip. Take a listen.
Wait a minute. You know, this is, excuse me, a damn fine cup of coffee. I've had I can't tell you how many cups of coffee in my life, and this is one of the best. Now, I'd like two eggs over hard. I know, don't tell me, it's hard on the arteries, but old habits die hard, just about as hard as I want those eggs. Bacon, super crispy, almost burned, cremated. That's great. And I'll have the grapefruit juice, just as long as those grapefruits are freshly squeezed.
My name's Audrey Horn.
Federal Bureau of Investigation, Special Agent Dale Cooper.
Can I sit here?
Well, Miss Horn, unless I miss my guess, your father is Benjamin Horn, the owner of this fine establishment. So I imagine you can sit anywhere you'd like. I'd also like to add, it would be my pleasure.
Thank you.
That's where you get a damn fine cup of coffee there at the Great Northern. And I often wonder, do people subject... I mean, I don't know if... you know, the Double R Diner also has great coffee. I don't know. That's an actual location. And I wonder if people subject the servers to this this rigmarole. I got to think it happens, right? And then we're introduced to Audrey Horn. Well, Dale Cooper is introduced to Audrey Horn, I should say. We already know who she is from the pilot. And there's a sexual reference here. He talks about freshly squeezed grapefruits as she walks in. Now, Audrey introduces herself to Cooper, and she tells him about how... Because he's like, "Oh, you friends with Laura Palmer?" And she was like, "Kind of, it's complicated." She says how Laura was helping tutor Johnny. Johnny's 27 years old. That's her brother. But he's in the third grade because he's got, quote, emotional problems. And then she says it runs in the family. Now, like I told you before, I'm not trying to spoil any plots, and I won't. But there will be elements that I want to sort of reference of things that happen later on. Season 3, Audrey Horn seems to have some kind of emotional problems. I don't know. That's just a hot take I have. If you've already seen the whole thing, maybe you can agree with me. It seems like maybe she does have some emotional problems, but they don't manifest until years and years later. But she asks him, she asks Cooper at the Great Northern, she says, "Do you like my ring?" And she presents to him the ring she's wearing. We don't get a clear look at it, at least on the copies I found of this show. You can't really see the ring. But the whole series of Twin Peaks constantly references this jade ring, which we're going to talk about later. You don't find out about this till I don't even know when. Do we know about it yet? I'm trying to think off the top of my head because I've watched this whole thing twice now. I don't have a reason to think that it's the same jade ring, but it's a ring nonetheless. So back to the case. Cooper and Truman, they go to get the autopsy. They find out that Laura died between midnight and 4 a.m., which makes me think 3 a.m., right? The witching hour, the inverted hour of Christ's death. So James, he'll later confess in the episode that he was riding around and she jumped off his bike at 12:30 a.m. the night that she died. He was the last person to see her besides the people involved with her murder. And she jumped off at 21 in Sparkwood, which is a whole Twin Peaks reference you'll see pop up. And we find out that in the last 12 hours of her life, she had sexual relations with at least 3 men. Again, really wild stuff. This was on ABC. A 17-year-old girl doing lines of coke and having orgies and getting murdered at 17 on TV, right? Of course, they don't show you all those details. Not on this. But like I always say, the Twin Peaks, it's layers. There's layers to it. Now, Shelley, you know, she's married to the abusive Leo Johnson. She's doing some laundry outside. And she sees that Leo has this blood-soaked shirt. So she hides it in the dresser because she don't really trust Leo. Of course she doesn't. He's a scumbag. And then Leo even, she's headed off to work. And Leo's all creepy. He's like, save me a piece of pie. And that kind of bugs me because I feel like it should be called a slice of pie. I don't know what the normal term is. I feel like it should be slice of pie, but he calls it a piece of pie. It's like, it should be a slice of pizza, right? I don't know. Maybe that's a territorial thing. Maybe in the Northwest, that's what they call it. I don't know. And, you know, Leo's abusive. Later, he beats Shelley with a soap in the sock for losing this shirt. Because he knows he's got blood all over this shirt, and he's like, "Where, you know, you lost it." And he's worried. So he is abusive. So Cooper and Truman, they're investigating, they're interrogating various suspects, including James, who they suspect shot the picnic video, the one where Laura and Donna are dancing around. And James reveals to them about how he was, in fact, Laura's secret lover, and he confesses about how she was doing cocaine, as well as how she gave him half of the brokenhearted necklace, the best friend's necklace, right? Then Bobby and Mike, you know, Snake, they're in jail. And they're arguing because they got into the fight at the Roadhouse bar the previous episode. And they're arguing about how they're going to repay Leo Johnson this 10 grand that they owe him for dope. And Bobby says, what do you want to do? Go sell light bulbs door to door? And this is a Lynch reference. This is, if you read his book, Room to Dream, which is kind of his autobiography, I'm going to read you from it to save you some time. He's talking about Lester Grossman, who was president of a fraternity he was in. He says, a relative of Lester's got us a bunch of light bulbs for super cheap, and we sold them door to door. We were selling them like hotcakes, and we made a truckload of money. Then we threw a giant party. So, you know, just a fun fact to throw in there. Bobby said, what are we going to do, sell light bulbs door to door? Well, apparently that's a lucrative thing. If you can find some bulbs that fell off the back of a truck or something. So they show this video, right? They're showing this video of Donna and Laura at the picnic, and it zooms in on her face, and it's rough, right? There's a lot of pain underneath her smile, and you hear her, you know, and it's very sort of surreal moment of the show. You hear her saying, help me. And this is the duality of the story. She's this beautiful, smiling, happy homecoming queen, but inside, she's going through hell. She's doing coke. She's looking for acceptance through older men. Meanwhile, Donna, she confesses to her mother how she feels guilty that she's having this love affair with James now because Laura was her best friend and Laura was dating James. She was also dating Bobby. So even though Donna and James apparently never consummated or did anything physically wrong. They were both falling in love with each other this whole time, and now she feels bad because Laura's dead. Meanwhile, at the Twin Peaks Sheriff Department, you see boxes and boxes of donuts. And again, this is a Lynch reference. All right. I'm going to read to you from, again, from Room to Dream. There's a chapter where there's this project he was working on called Ronnie Rocket. And you get a clue that the donut actually has a very hidden meaning. These desperate elements come together to create a parable for the spiritual beliefs that had become central to Lynch's life. The detective in the story is counseled by a wise man on the importance of maintaining consciousness. In this story, to lose this is to die, and love and pain are the energies that allow people to remain conscious. The recurring motif of the circle, the detective visits a night spot called the Circle Club and is told that things keep going round and round and life is a donut, alludes to the wheel of karma and rebirth. The film closes on an image of a figure with four arms dancing on a lily pad, reaching for a golden egg. The sacred Hindu texts, the Vedas, tell us that the material universe, which emerged from the mind of Brahma, is a golden egg that floats like a dream in the waters of divine consciousness. Now, a lot to unpack there. The donut isn't just a donut in Twin Peaks. It's the wheel of karma and rebirth, which plays a role because there's this whole manipulation of space-time that goes on in the storyline. And then, of course, you've got this consciousness aspect and this creation of reality. You've got the egg, which I believe it's next episode. I'm going to dive deep onto the Big Ed's gas farm. It has the logo of an egg, but it kind of looks like a sun. There's a reason for that, and it's very much illuminate confirm, right? But here's another reference to the golden egg. And on top of that, you also, in the storyline, you'll see that there's this symbolism that they do in some of the weirder episodes of what appears to be a golden sphere. Not necessarily an egg, but a sphere. A lot of consciousness elements going on in the storyline. Time for another classic scene. Cooper is talking to FBI Special Agent Albert Rosenfeld, who's on his way to Twin Peaks. And he tells him, he gives him a little advice on where to stop to grab a bite to eat. Take a listen.
All right, Albert, bring the boys. You can have the body all day tomorrow. No, I can't do it. They're going to put her in the ground on Monday. Albert, listen. If you come up through Lewis Fork, I can recommend a place for lunch. The Lamp Lighter Inn. They got a cherry pie there that'll kill you.
A cherry pie that'll kill you. And that's the thing. Cherry pies, donuts, coffee, they all play a role in the world of Twin Peaks. Like when Cooper and Truman, in a minute here, they're going to go to the Packard house where they get offered coffee, and Cooper says, yes, that's the magic word. It facilitates manifestation or something like that. I don't know yet. Like I said, we're all unpacking this together. Also, notice he mentions coming up through Lewis Fork. Meriwether Lewis plays a massive role in the story of Twin Peaks when you read the books later on, which we'll go through. Ironically, the river is not named after Meriwether Lewis, but Lewis infamously had explored this area. Also, that scene's interesting because Cooper, he can switch gears. He's talking about how they're gonna like, he's really concerned about Laura Palmer, and he loves the citizens of Twin Peaks, but he can also be very blunt and to the point. He's like, they're gonna bury her body next week. Oh, and by the way, there's this cherry pie that'll kill you. You know, he's a very quirky character, particularly more so in the early episodes. Okay, so Cooper and Truman, they go to Josie Packard to ask her about Laura, because Laura was also teaching Josie Packard English. Very busy in this town. That's why she's the homecoming queen, right? And Cooper, he's got this great intuition. He picks up that Truman is actually secretly seeing Josie Packard, all right? And here we get another classic line. I want to play it for you just for the heck of it. It's, Jack Nance's character, Pete Martell, who we all know and love. And we already talked about him in the actors and actresses episode who unfortunately he's passed away. He served Cooper and Truman some coffee, but wait a minute. Take a listen.
Fellas, don't drink that coffee.
You'd never guess. There was a fish in the percolator. Sorry.
There's a fish in the percolator. Yes, that's right. Now, if you watch the scene, Cooper, he gets a full mouthful of coffee right when Pete comes out and tells him this. And what a man. He just guts it. He's like, okay. Doesn't even spit it back in the cup. Doesn't make a scene. Very stoic. He just takes it like a man. All right? Like I told you in the beginning, he's the Sigma male. Next. We see that Catherine Packard, again, that's Andrew Packard's sister, Pete Martell's wife, is sleeping with Ben Horn, the town's capitalist crook. And they both want the sawmill to go bankrupt, so they are discussing about setting it on fire. But you'll notice in Catherine's bedroom, there is an owl on the dresser. I'll put the image on the Instagram like I will be doing all the time here. So make sure you're following me, Instagram, at Isaac Weishaupt. Because the owls are not what they seem, we find out. Okay. Then Donna goes to visit Laura's parents' house, and she shows up. She's wearing a sweater that has what appears to be the Twin Peaks diamonds. Interesting choice of sweaters. Again, photo on the Instagram. And Sarah Palmer, she's tripping hard. She's having a hard time, as one would expect. She sees Laura's face on Donna's head. And she starts screaming. Then she sees Bob hiding in the room. She's screaming hard. A scream queen, dare I say. And she sees this Bob guy creeping. Next, we see Ronette Pulaski. She's in her coma at the... Well, not... Is she in a coma or is she just like conked out? I think she's just conked out. She's in a hospital room at Calhoun Memorial Hospital. And Hawk is asking the parents some questions. He gets a glimpse of the man with one arm snooping around but loses track of him. Now, this logo for the Calhoun Memorial Hospital is very important. I will keep this until the very end, because it's way too confusing at this point, and I don't want to drop it on you this soon. But the symbol of the Calhoun Memorial Hospital is the evolving man. It's the man, a Vitruvian man in a way. But more specifically, I've got a literal reference to a book that it represents man crossing the abyss. Very important in Aleister Crowley, Jack Parsons realms, okay? So, again, we'll come back to that later on in the series when the timing is right. So, Cooper and Truman, they go to the Double R diner. They try that cherry pie. They meet Norma. They meet Shelley. Cooper meets the log lady, and she warns him that one day her log will have something to say about this. All right. We also find out Laura was working the Meals on Wheels through the Double R. This chick's busy. She should have won the homecoming queen many years in a row somehow. Then finally, last scene, Dr. Jacoby, he's listening to audio tapes. Remember how he said he was seeing Laura? Well, he's listening to these tapes, and Laura's confessing about how she loves James, but he's so dumb. Shots fired at James all the time. And he deserves it, right? And she says how she wished she would have been with him, meaning Dr. Jacoby, apparently. And he's crying, he opens up a coconut, and boom, there's the second half of a heart necklace. So what's going on? The show's really setting up this soapy mystery vibe, and they're doing a great job. So that is the end of season one, episode one, right? And let's do a little in conclusion for you real quick. Well, not real quick. There's a lot to talk about. We have to revisit this JFK thing, this James Shelby Downard, this Trinity thing. And first thing you got to understand is the Jornada del Muerto. I'm going to read you from Wikipedia. The Jornada del Muerto was the name given by the Spanish conquistadors to the area's basin, and the almost waterless 90-mile trail across the Jornada, beginning north of Las Cruces and ending south of Socorro, New Mexico. I was with a guy in the military who was from Las Cruces, and he made it sound like, I guess it's near Tijuana, I think? I don't remember. He made it sound like it's a pretty interesting area, we'll say. All right. The name translates from Spanish as Dead Man's Journey or Route of the Dead Man. Spaceport America is located in the middle portion of the Jornada del Muerto at an elevation of blah, blah, blah. The Trinity Nuclear Test Site, the location of the first test of an atomic bomb in 1945, is in the northern portion of the Jornada. Now, pay no matter to the coincidence of Socorro, New Mexico being mentioned here, because Socorro is one of the most famous locations of a supposed wrecked UFO. Instead, let's focus on the Dead Man's Journey aspect and this Trinity site. You recall, we interviewed Paolo Harris. She had researched the first crashed UFO in America, which was not Roswell. It was at the Trinity site in 1945, right after they detonated the first atomic bomb. Her and Jacques Vallée wrote the book, and we interviewed her, and it was fascinating, right? Now let's talk about this guy, James Shelby Downard. And it's possible we do a full deep dive on this character here at some point on our journey. He wrote an essay titled The Call to Chaos. And to let you know what you're in for, it starts out like this. The United States, which long has been called a melting pot, should more descriptively be called a witch's cauldron, wherein the hierarchy of the grand architect of the universe arranges for ritualistic crimes and psychopolitical psychodramas to be performed in accordance with a master plan. The ritual crimes are principally oriented to sex and death. In the cultist homage to their zany notions of the universal spirit that created the world, and also as a rite of passage employed to catapult the human race into the much-trumpeted New Age, known as the Novus Ordo Seclorum to the Freemasons who devised this country and its currency. This guy's been writing this stuff since the 70s. I don't know his full bio. I've got several of books about him I got to read through. I hadn't been fully interested in him until Twin Peaks, and now I'm all in. But I got to read these books. I want to say he started talking about this stuff in the 70s. The Jornada del Muerto Trail is symbolically leading to the killing of the king ritual. It's called the Journey of Death, the Journey to Death, excuse me. And it's the road to the event, and he describes it as the long road of alchemy. And he says that the Jornada del Muerto is where the atomic bomb was set off, because again, the killing of the king ritual is the destruction of primordial matter. So matter, the atom, was destroyed at the Trinity site. Primordial matter was destroyed there. And it's kind of the opposite of the Hieros Gamos. It's the Greek idea of the creation of the world, which was done by unifying opposing polarities. The sacred marriage, they call it. So the opposite would be the liberation of primordial energy, the sacred divorce. Now, I'd be lying if I told you I knew exactly what the heck they're talking about. I just know that Downard is very well in tune to a lot of these occult processes, and I don't have any reason to disbelieve him. He says that the point of this whole thing is to recreate the conditions of the creation of man, which I've been sort of plugged into for a while. That is the ultimate goal, is the revolution and the creation of a new life force. And Downard, he relays it very interesting. That Adam Kadmon, that's the primordial Adam, the first man, was in fact the golem of God. And this is according to he called it the cryptocracy. We call it the Illuminati. All right. So the primordial Adam Kadmon, was the Golem of God, and he was the cosmic masculine and feminine combined. Again, the sacred marriage brought together. But he at some point rejected the feminine and performed the first destruction of primordial matter. And thus our world was created with all these opposing polarities, this imperfect world, like electromagnetism, which plays a role in Twin Peaks over and over again. Well, fast forward, and you got the Trinity test in 1945 on the journey to the dead man, and bam, the destruction of primordial matter yet again. And he says that the Jornada originally may have started at Teotihuacan in Mexico at a sacrificial altar to the bat god, which he says is equated to the devil in Mexican mythology. Now, what's interesting is that Teotihuacan is also a location that you see often in Ancient Aliens for having these, unexplainable megalith things. Now, in America, the Jornada actually starts at Kern Place in New Mexico, and Peter Kern built the entrance to the trail. He built this large ceremonial gate with the assistance of Toltecs, which, if you've read any of Don Miguel Ruiz's books, like The Four Agreements, that's where I first came across this term, the Toltecs. They're the ones that, and they talk about the Maya, the illusory nature of reality. So Peter Kern built this entrance to the Jornada del Muerto, and this gate was called the Gate with a Thousand Doors, a.k.a. the Gate of Death. Now, to show you why it's important for you to follow me, like, I don't profess to be the repository of all this knowledge. I'm just researching and presenting, okay? There's nothing special about me. The only thing I bring to the table is the work that I do to research, and the filter and the lens of reality that I see. Because if you don't look through the world through this filter, you get sucked into Normieville. And you don't want to be in Normieville. What are you, a free feed loser? You don't want that. Here's what I'm talking about Kern Place, all right? And the ceremonial gate built with Toltec priests, the gate with a thousand doors, the gate of death. And if you go online and learn more about it, as I did, this is what you'll find. Here's a website where they're talking about this. This is like the first result on Google. Kern Place Gate, 1916. An effort to increase the sales of homes at Kern Place, Peter Kern had an ambitious sign built in 1916 at the entrance of the neighborhood. Bro, what are you talking about? What are you even talking about? Not even close. And you can see images of this thing. I'll try to put it on the Instagram too. Let me put a note on here. No way. No way, no how was this to sell homes. Are you mad? And I'll give you more. And in the same article, it even later goes on to describe what the gate looks like. The whole thing to sell homes. Get out of here. He says, designed by Kern, the gate was made of two pillars linked on top by an intricate iron design representing Kern's fondness of mysticism. The gate featured various symbols, including a zodiac calendar, the Kern family crest, and 444 electric light globes. There's that angel number, 444. That illuminated the words Kern Place. The gate was lit every night for about 2 years before area residents complained about the overwhelming brightness. Also, the gate was dismantled in 1954 to make room for a street widening project. Okay, so the crazy mystical gate with all the symbolism and lights so bright that people complained about it, that was erected to sell homes. Lights that were so bright and annoying that no one wanted to buy a home near this thing. Okay. Yeah, and we're crazy. We're the crazy ones. Got it. Oh, boy. Anyway, and it gets wilder. You know, James Shelby Downard was talking about how Peter Kern, who was a Freemason, allegedly, the story goes, and I don't know how to find this because you can't find information about this stuff. The claim is that ritualistically, he was beheaded at the grand opening of this gate. He wasn't talking about it. He was being about it. Anyhow, all that is the Jornada del Muerto. A very fascinating connection there because the Trinity site is on the way there. Also, I believe the Trinity site is on the 33rd parallel along with Roswell, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong. I'm just freestyling here. But the point is this. Let's zoom out and wrap this up. The point is this. JFK allegedly was used in a public execution ritual, much like Christ. This is the death ritual, and he was symbolically passing through the gate of 1,000 doors in a Freemason ritual. He, in fact, did visit the Trinity site in June of 1963 before he was killed in November of 63. So, maybe, right? And what's interesting, Marilyn Manson, of all people, was writing about these things on a website. He was promoting the Holy Wood album. It was the first album after the Columbine shootings that he was blamed for. And you can find archive websites that discuss what was on that webpage. And he was talking about all this stuff. He was initiated into this stuff, or he at least minimum knew about it. Then we also have the Marilyn Monroe, not Marilyn Manson, Marilyn Monroe, depicted as the great whore in as a role in the Kennedy ritual. She is the goddess in the ritual, hence the term Venus, as in Venus descending. It's all psychodrama because they're communing with the gods. Then you also have parallels to the introduction of evil into God's world. For example, at the Trinity site, there was that massive container called Jumbo that they took the time to build this thing, transport it, and set it up near the detonation site. And it was intended as a backup plan in case things didn't go as originally planned, but allegedly it was never used. And then later it was destroyed by detonating a bunch of bombs inside of it and breaking it up into pieces. Now, Downard claims this was part of the cryptocracy psychodrama ritual to reenact the Kabbalistic creation story. And he goes on to talk about this. There's a term in Kabbalah that he tried to explain, and I couldn't really figure out what he was saying. I found a more succinct explanation on this website, jmberlin.de. All right. This is the comparison Downard is trying to make to this jumbo massive container, okay? Because he says it's a Kabbalah thing. All right, here we go. In order to make space for creation, the omnipresent God contracted. In the empty space that resulted, God sent a ray of light that was to initiate the actual act of creation. 10 vessels, the Hebrew sephirot, that's the 10 spheres on the Kabbalistic tree of life, those are the sephirot. 10 vessels, symbolizing the harmony of the universe, were to catch this ray. However, they were unable to contain the powerful current of light, and the lower 7 vessels shattered. Their shards united with sparks of divine light and fell into the abyss. The breaking of the vessels is interpreted as a symbol for a world in a state of disharmony, one in which evil has entered. So Downard writes about how there were all these rituals about breaking bottles, and the idea is to put the evil back inside the container, back into the bottle. Put the genie back in the bottle. Because genie is a term that comes from jinn, and the jinn are evil spirits in Hebrew mysticism. So he basically makes the connection that the jumbo was supposed to symbolize this shattering of the sephirot during the destruction of primordial matter, which is what happened at the Trinity atomic bomb testing. So, in conclusion, we're definitely revisiting this subject by the time we're going to be done with Twin Peaks. Downard reveals the antagonistic forces of male and female, opposing polarities, good and evil, and how the balance can get equalized through transference rituals like killing of the king, as well as the sex and death rituals where humans are used as the sacrificial scapegoat. All those things should be pinging along with the storyline of Twin Peaks. If you're starting to piece it together, you've got the sex and death rituals and the human sacrifice being used for a higher purpose on a spiritual warfare. So there you go. I hope you enjoyed that. Next episode you need to watch, season 1, episode 2, called Zen or the Skill to Catch a Killer. And we'll come right back and we're going to decode it. All right. And also, I forgot to mention, I don't know if you noticed, I took the intro music and reversed it. A bit of a play on the episode, I think it might be next episode, where Cooper has the dream and goes into the waiting room, the red room. So stay tuned for that. I wanted to make it unique. I want to make the Grey Lodge fun and exciting and different. All right. So thank you for your support. Please stick around. I know some of this Twin Peaks stuff isn't for everybody. And you're gonna have your moments where you say, I don't wanna watch this. This is so stupid. I did it. That's how I know you're gonna go through it. In fact, season two, you're gonna really be tested. Season three, you're gonna really, really be tested. But we gotta get through it. You wanted a course? I'm giving you a course. I'm not charging you $1,000 for it either. You're gonna go along the journey with me. Our own Jornada del Muerto, alright? All right, that was a bad example, bad comparison. All right, thanks for your support, and check out season 1, episode 2, and we'll come right back into the Grey Lodge. Stay woke.